Yep. Y'all know what time it is. It's time for the Shaw's Law Podcast. You know who I am and what I do. Rob Shaw, a.k.a. the Pod God. Say it with me now. A.k.a. Harry Potter. And today we have a beautiful one-man band, Monologue Poppy, just me by myself, show lined up for you today. What is the date? Today is March 28th, Monday. Why I say it like that? Monday, March 28th. And we are in the Final Four, and the NBA season is headed towards the playoffs. And somehow, I'm going to start this conversation by talking about the goddamn Oscars. Who would have thunk it? The Oscars. So, a few things to know about me. I don't give a fuck about award shows, graduations, recitals, any of that bullshit. I'll put up with graduations because it's a big stepping stone in somebody's life. And if I'm at your graduation, you're probably important to my life. So I'll deal with those. But award shows, I don't watch the ESPYs, the Grammys, the Source Awards, the BET Awards, any of that bullshit. Because one, I'm literate and I can read. So if I care about who wins any of those whack-ass awards, I'll read an article the next day. Second of all, shit's is trash. If I want to watch the BET Rap Cypher, I'll wait for it to drop on YouTube. I'm not watching no award show in real time. And the only reason we're having this conversation is because as much as I hate award shows, shit got critical last night at the Oscars. Chris Rock is up there to present an award, I'm assuming, and he's a comedian, so what's he do? Cracks a little joke. Tells Jada Pinkett Smith, yo, can't wait for G.I. Jane 2. Jada was rocking the baldy. Just a quick jab, like, it wasn't even crazy funny. Like, Will laughed, and then I'm assuming Will caught a look at Jada's face, because it pans to Will. Will's laughing. Jada's not laughing. It pans back to Chris Rock. And whatever happened between it panning from Will laughing to back to Chris Rock, Jada must have said something and lit a fire in my boy Will's ass. Because before Chris Rock could get his neck joke off, Will Smith is coming up the stage. And like, fellas, y'all know what time this was. This was, oh man, I thought this joke was kind of funny, but you know, happy wife, happy life. So she's mad about it. Now I gotta act like I'm mad about it. This nigga wasn't mad. He thought that joke was dumb funny. And honestly, from Will's perspective, he probably thought, oh good, somebody's crushing Jada on TV the way they killed me on the red table and I was all these stupid ass memes. But then she gave him that look, and I know what she said. Oh my God, Will. I can't believe you're going to laugh at that joke on national TV. Now Will got to go fight a nigga he don't want to fight. Honestly, as a man, you've probably been in this situation because of a female. Like, you wind up in a beef over something your chick was involved in, and you're really not, you're not riding with her. You're thinking, damn, she's wrong, but this my girl, so here we go. Will came out on the good end of this, because many of these situations where you get into a situation because of a chick you're dealing with ends in a good old-fashioned passionate ass whooping for you. Like, you tried to be cool and be tough in front of your shorty, and next thing you know, you got your ass beat. So Will kind of came up off this because he walked up to that stage. Chris Rock is from Brooklyn. I'm disappointed with him. He's from New York. What did he think Will was coming up there to do? His spider senses didn't tingle not once. Like, Will wasn't coming up there to have no conversation on national TV. Came up there, buttered Chris Rock's biscuit one time. Just a quick little pow-pow. Little pop-pop-pop. Real fast. And then kept it pushing. And Chris Rock, first of all, Chris Rock is a better man than me. Somebody look up what he got paid to be there. Because Son slapped me on national TV. Oh, it's Rumble in the Jungle time. I might take a L, but I'm not wearing no slap. Also, from now on, that is no longer Will Smith. That is Trill Smith. He just came up there and put the hand of God on Chris Rock on national television. Then turned his back to him, which is sort of like some fly gangster shit, but also like some sucker shit. Because if you just hit me and then you immediately turn your back to me, if I hit you with your back turned, now the narrative is, oh, you hit him with your back turned. So I get it. But I felt when Will walked away, it was, look, I slapped this nigga and he's not doing nothing. I'm giving him my back because I know he's really not about that action. Clearly, Will is really from West Philadelphia, born and raised. That was bad. Like, Chris Rock cracking little jokes afterwards. And then Will got back to his seat and was still talking wild, greasy. Yo, keep my wife's name out your fucking mouth. So not only did you smack me and chump me in front of this room full of all my peers, now you're talking to me nuts. You're cursing at me. You're clearly angry. And now I'm on stage in front of all these people. I just got slapped. And now I'm standing here. Whew. They better be glad this wasn't rap. Like, if this was the Source Awards or the BET Awards, oh, this might have ended in gunfire. And, like, that's just the state of hip-hop. We're dealing with two men in their, my guess is probably late 40s. They might even be older than that. So they're a little bit more mature. Well, at least Chris Rock is, because Will was out there on some nut shit. But that was really, I see people saying that they think it might have been fake. There's nothing fake about that. Because if you know anything about how the Oscars move, that type of behavior is not something that they want on their radar. Like, it's just not. So I don't think it was fake. I think Will was really, I don't think he was even upset. I think he was, Jada was upset, and then there he was trying to, like, honor his queen. And I see, and, oh, the memes, the internet, undefeated. Like, Will might just have to quit, because, like, you just can't win on the internet at this point. Because, like, he cried at the red table and they made him a meme and nobody gave two shits about his mental health. Surprise, surprise. A black man not getting any credit for having mental health issues. But then, like, I'm sure when he smacked Chris Rock, he was mad. But then he was like, damn, at least the internet gonna get off my back. Nah, man, the internet immediately did what the internet does and started interneting. And boy, were them niggas good. There was one that said Will was going to live with his auntie and uncle in Bel Air. Laid me, was dead. I saw one meme that had the cast of Grown Ups walk in and they said, oh, Will better watch out, here they come. Another goodie. They even had a Spider-Man one where Andrew Garfield is like in class texting and they said that he was texting the other Peter Parkers like, yo, did Will Smith just smack the shit out of Chris Rock in your universe too? Like, the internet was on some real life internet shit, and I love it. I'm here for it, always. And then I saw some of my friends try and take, like, the deep route, the, oh man, how can we laugh at two successful black men attacking each other on TV? Because we laugh at everything. Like, it's okay to laugh. That shit was funny. He laughed at the joke and then 30 seconds later was in complete fight mode. There's only one thing that gets you into fight mode that quickly. A woman. And maybe your children. But other than that, like, nobody goes from he was dying laughing to he just put paws on me. Second of all, this isn't sports, but this is what I keep telling y'all stupid ass fans that want to heckle the athletes. That could be you. You could be your very own Chris Rock getting slapped by somebody for some shit you said that you thought was a joke. I keep telling y'all, we're gonna have Malice at the Palace Part 2. And hands and feet are going to be laid upon some average citizens. And then, like, when you just look at physical statures, like, Will Smith's, like, 6'3". Like, that's a big dude. Chris Rock's a tiny dude. Or not a tiny, but he's not Will Smith big. Boom. Hands upon his face. Nothing he could do but crack a smile and say, oh, Will Smith just slapped the shit out of me. I would pay my last dollar to hear Chris Rock's inner monologue while he's standing up there after just catching a swift right hand from the man who played Agent J in Men in Black. Damn it, man. It was good stuff. I hope they do have a sit down and can talk about it as two black men. But that's not going to stop me laughing at these memes and videos. Like, I'm just not mature enough for that. This dude got slapped on TV during a whack-ass award show. And now that whack-ass award show will live on in infamy. And it's probably a top two Oscar moment. And guess what? It's not two. So I'm glad I got that off my chest. Now, let's talk a little bit of hoops. It's March Madness. You know it's my time. You know I'm here for it. Our Final Four is set. We have Villanova versus Kansas, a one seed and a two seed. And then we have Duke versus UNC. Two seed Duke, eight seed UNC. And it's just, oh man, I won't even get into this yet. Let's give a little bit of love to the St. Peter's Peacocks. There you go. That's the answer. They're the Peacocks. One of you goofy motherfuckers lied to me and tell me y'all knew that before March started. Go ahead. Lie. I dare you. That's what I thought. Anyway, Shaheen Holloway is their coach. He's probably going to wind up the coach at his alma mater, Seton Hall, after this gigantic, massive tournament run. We've never had a 15 seed advance this far. His story is dope in general. He could hoop. He played at Seton Hall. He was a McDonald's All-American. Shout out to the Burger Boys. He was actually the MVP of the 1996 McDonald's All-American game, a game that featured real killers. Like, really, Kobe was in it. Steven Jackson is in that class. There's really dudes. I got to double check. I want to say Stephon Marbury is in that class as well, or he might be in the 95 class. But those are household names. Both of those, the two dudes I did name are NBA champions, Steven Jackson and Kobe Bryant. But also, actually, let's just look it up. McDonald's. Yep, this is happening in real time. All-American game. McDonald's all-day breakfast menu. My computer thinks I'm fat. All-American game, 1996. But if you're the MVP of a game that features Kobe Bryant, you were hooping. Like, let's just call a spade a spade. Oh, this list is OD. Oh, they had some killers here. Tim Thomas. For those of you that don't know, Tim Thomas was really that deal. He's actually super high up on the list of players that would be much better in today's game than they were in their era. Steven Jackson, Jermaine O'Neal, Ed Cota. Ed Cota was a guy at North Carolina. Richard Hamilton, Kobe. This is all right. And that was just, that's the East team. The West team features Michael Bibby, Mateen Cleaves, Corey Benjamin, and then Lauren Woods had a cup of tea in the NBA. And Ronnie Fields. Oh, man. He didn't play, but he was on the team. He didn't attend. But Ronnie Fields is a big name. For those of you that don't know, he was KG's running mate at Farragut Academy in Chicago. And he was a special, special athlete before a car accident took away basically his superpowers. But that's a list, man. There's some killers out there. And he walked away with the MVP and went on to have a nice career at Seton Hall. And now it seems like he may have jumped the gun. He's going to be the Seton Hall coach. He might have been able to get a bigger offer after this tournament run. He might have really been able to kind of just call his shot. Yo, this job is open and this is where I want to be. And right now, I think we got to admit, taking a 15 seed to the Elite Eight, knocking off a 2 seed and a 3 seed in the process, it's that time. Like, shout out to St. Peter's, but that was a real dick on the table moment. Like, that is a dick on the table moment for Shaheen Holloway and those players. They will always look back on this tournament run with fondness. And this is something that I recently started to think, and I just want to put this out there, and I'd love for some feedback on it. One bid leagues, there's a chance that like a team just gets hot in a one bid league and can win a bunch of tournament games because they start to gel at the right time. Because if you're in a one bid league, you have to win your conference tournament. So if your conference tournament, assuming you win your conference tournament, you probably got a bye, maybe even a double bye into, you probably didn't get a double bye in a one big league, but maybe you got a bye into the second round of your tournament, but then you have to win the second round, the third round, and then the championship. So now you've won 3 in a row. So now you're kind of hot. Like, you're on a streak, because in order to win a one bid league, you have to win your conference tournament. So you've won 3, maybe 4 games in a row. Maybe you were hot at the end of the season and like you're on like an 8-game win streak. And then like you're feeling yourself. You come in and I can play with anybody. And then you catch that round one dub. Now all bets are off. Now you're really feeling it. Oh, we can play with the best in the country. Come see us. And I think that is one of the dope things about being from a one-bid league, because some of the, in the bigger conferences, you might be coming into the tournament off a loss. Actually, most schools from the bigger conferences, except one, are coming in off a loss. Just going to let that marinate for you guys for a second. That's what that pause was. Just think about that. Unless they won their conference tournament, they're coming in off a loss. Duke came in off a loss. UNC came in off a loss. Kentucky came in off a loss. Arkansas came in off a loss. Michigan came in off a loss. Those big conference schools, they took an L before they came in most nights. So that's something to just think about. I'm going to give you guys something that I should have given you at the beginning of the tournament. But here it is. I don't want to not give you this. So I started the first NCAA championship that I really remember is 2001. I remember UConn won one when I was in Mexico. And my brain says, like, I was a little kid, it was for spring break. My brain says that it was the 1999 one. But I don't know if that's true. Actually, the more I think about it, I think it's UConn's 2004 one featuring Emeka Okafor and Ben Gordon. So the first NCAA championship that like I vividly remember is the 2001 Duke team. That is one of the 5 best teams I've ever seen. This is when I was a little kid and like I was a Duke fan, and then I grew the fuck up. But that 0-1 Duke team had pros upon pros upon pros. You had Jay Williams, arguably the best player in college basketball. You had Shane Battier, media darling, elite shooter, great 3-and-D guy, future NBA champion with the Miami Heat. You had Carlos Boozer, who turned out to be an NBA All-Star. You had Chris Duhon, who turned out to be a serviceable role player. And you had Mike Dunleavy, who I don't know if you guys remember, but was the 3rd overall pick in the 2002 draft. And it's just a loaded squad. So I remember that team. And they were a 1 seed, and they won it. But their final four, the total number of seeds is six. So Duke is a one, and so that's one. And then the other three teams are, I won't do this for every team, but just to, for the first time, Arizona is a two, Michigan State is a one, and Maryland is a three. Did I math that right? Now I'm scared of my math. I think it's seven. Oh, I definitely didn't math that right. Pardon me. Their seeds were seven. Simple math. Gotcha, boy. Crazy. But then Maryland is a one seed, but their total number in the final four of the seeds of each of the final four teams combined is nine. So I went through from 01 up until this year, and I'll just read them off. And if I have thoughts on that final four, I'll throw them in really quickly. Cuse in 03, they were a three seed, and they were the number, and their final four total for each team was a nine. I remember that championship very vividly. I remember that final four super vividly. That is Syracuse, Kansas, Texas, and Marquette. That final four, once again, had a busload of pros in it. It's almost like if there's good NBA or future NBA players, it's going to make good basketball. So Syracuse has Carmelo Anthony and Hakeem Warwick. Kansas has Kirk Heinrich and Nick Collison. Texas has TJ Ford. Youngins, go look up TJ Ford. That was a bad, bad man before injuries got him. Marquette has this guy you may or may not have heard of, Dwayne Wade. He only turned out to be like a future NBA champion, league MVP, or not league MVP, finals MVP, one of the top five shooting guards of all time. Like, pros. I also want to say Travis Diener may have been on this Marquette team. I would look that up, but actually I'm just not gonna. 2004 UConn. What I remember about them, Ben Gordon was that deal. Like, Ben Gordon was the business. They wound up playing Georgia Tech in the Final Four, or in the finals. I had to look up that Georgia Tech team. Hardy Har, pros. Will Bynum, Jared Jack. The other two teams in that Final Four are Duke and Oklahoma. And their total seed number for 04 is 8. So they had a 2, a 3, a 1. You know how embarrassing it'd be if I mathed wrong again. And a 2. No, that's 8. Woo. 05, UNC. I don't want to talk about this one a ton. UNC was a 1 seed, and overall their seed number of all the teams in the Final Four was an 11. I do want to point out that Marvin Williams did not start on this team and went on to be the second pick in the NBA draft, and I had super-duper high hopes for him, and he did not meet those expectations. 06 and 07. Oh, no, we'll start with 06. Florida is a 3 seed. Their seed number is 20, which will be the second highest we have. And the reason their seed number is so high is because we have our first 11 seed in the time we are tracking make it to the Final Four. So it's Florida a 3, UCLA a 2, LSU a 4, and George Mason out the Colonial Conference a 11 seed. And that is, we're going to have a couple more 11 seeds make it to the Final Four. That's the highest seed we'll have make it to the Final Four. Highest. It's the highest seed we'll have make it to a Final Four. And they are, but there's a couple of them that do it. The next year, Florida repeats as champion. This time they're a 1 seed, and the seed total is 6. Once again, a team that wins it, busload of pros. Also, that UNC team with Marvin Williams, busload of pros. Rashard McCants, Raymond Felton, who I do not look like. I hate when y'all niggas tell me I look like Raymond Felton. Sean May, just pros. Florida, back-to-back champions, pros. Corey Brewer, Jakeem Noah, Al Horford. That's three pros, and then I want to say there was a couple other guys who might have had cups of coffee in the league. and not just pros, but Noah and Horford are multiple time All-Stars, with Noah owning a Defensive Player of the Year. That was both Florida teams. 2008, Kansas. This is Kansas versus Memphis, Dozier for the championship, where Derrick Rose, a pro, misses some free throws that really wind up biting John Calipari and Memphis. So that is 08. So in 09 is when, did I grow up in 09 or did I grow up in 2010? I believe, so 09 is UNC, another team with pros. Is Danny Green the best one off that UNC team now? Danny Green winds up being a second round pick. And 2009 North Carolina, I know they have pros, but I just want to know, is Danny Green the best? Ed Davis, another pro. Wayne Ellington is on that team. Tyler Hansborough, Ty Lawson. Ty Lawson's probably at his peak, he was the best player, but Danny Green's longevity has surpassed him. Um, 2010 is when I grew up. Calipari left Memphis and went to Kentucky, and I left Duke and followed Coach Cal to Kentucky. So these are my formative, like, the first couple years I was telling you I was a kid. Now I'm an adult telling you these rankings. Duke goes on to win it behind a trio of actually not pros. 2010 Duke has good players, but Mason Plumlee is probably the best player out of all those guys. John Shire is the coach in waiting at Duke right now. Kyle Singular was a top six recruit who never really panned out. He's still in the league, but he's not really that guy. Nolan Smith was dope. Wound up being a first-round pick of the Trailblazers. So they did have pros, but not pros that, like, stuck or had really big NBA impacts. So that's 2010. Your national championship is Duke. Their seed total is 13. They wound up playing that really good West Virginia team that had Deshaun Butler, Truck Bryant, Devin Ebigs, Joe Mazzulla, and Mount Vernon's own Kevin Jones. So that's something I just remember from that Final Four. And then that's also the Butler makes it to the championship game, and what do they have? A pro in Gordon Hayward, and it's Hayward from half court for the win, and it back irons. That's that championship. UConn wins it in 2011, and this is our highest seed total. UConn is a 3 seed that wins it, but their Final Four is 26. The seed total for 2011 is 26. That'll be the highest we see. So it's 3 seed UConn, 8 seed Butler, 4 seed Kentucky, and VCU from the Colonial, again, as an 11 seed. Pardon. So that's VCU's first time up. UNC. Jesus Christ. Florida in 06 had George Mason University as an 11 seed. VCU is 2011. That's my mistake. I'm sorry. This UConn team in 2011 is the epic Kemba Walker run, if you guys don't remember, where they win the Big East tournament. And actually, just if it was tournament play, they didn't lose. They won the Maui Invitational that year, which is one of the big preseason, early season exempt tournaments. They won that. Kemba went crazy. Then they got into the Big East tournament. That's when Kemba killed McGee from Notre Dame, where they were like, where Kemba hits the step back and McGee falls. Kemba Walker in the Garden, like that one. My announcer voice fake tough. Y'all like that. That was a vibe just now. Y'all like that. 2012 is, I'm not even being biased. I told you the 0-1 Duke team is one of the best I've ever seen. This 2012 Kentucky team is a one seed, the number one overall seed, and then their total is 9. This Kentucky team is probably the best team I've ever seen. Like, we're talking 7. All right, 6 killers and Kyle Wilcher. 6, like, certified killers, and then Kyle Wilcher. So you have Marquise Teague at point, brother of NBA All-Star Jeff Teague, and he had his own little cup of coffee in the league. Deron Lamb, certified bucket, who, whenever it was looking kind of shaky with Marquise Teague, you actually put Deron Lamb in at point, and then add Darius Miller from the bench, but I'll get to him. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, who went on to be the number 2 pick in the draft. He was a really good athlete. That broken jump shot really did hurt his NBA career. Terrence Jones, who I loved. Sophomore year, Terrence Jones, absolute killer. And then Anthony Davis, National Player of the Year, Most Outstanding Player, number 1 pick. Goes on to be NBA champion with the Lakers. One of 15 people, if that, in the world who have an NCAA championship, Olympic gold, and an NBA championship. Like, that's a very select list. And that list is so select because, one, you only get 4 years to get your NCAA championship. So, like, that one has a finite amount of times. You can't qualify for this list if you didn't play in college. So that knocks off the LeBrons and the Kobes of the world and the Kevin Garnetts. There's only but so many Olympic spots, and the Olympics only come around every 4 years. And like, outside of LeBron and Melo, getting to 3 Olympics is a major task. Like, getting 2 cycles is pretty good. You have to have been, like, really that nigga for 12 straight years to make 3 Olympic teams. So that's hard. And then the NBA championship is no slouch. Like, I get it. There's, like, but if you're the cream of the crop, you probably are going to win a chip. But no, there's great players that haven't won a title. So, like, this is just an elite list. And then Darius Miller off the bench with 5-star Kyle Wilcher also off the bench, who wound up transferring to Gonzaga. But I just, that team had 6 pros. Kansas, that they played in the final, had 2 pros, maybe more. They definitely had Thomas Robinson, went on to be the 5th pick, and point guard Tyshawn Taylor. Without looking, I definitely remember those two, and I think I'm missing another player, like me, another pro. Is this a Sharon Collins team or a Cole Aldridge team? I'd have to look, but just know that there were pros on Kansas as well. In 13, Louisville wins it. They are a 1 seed, and the total seed number is 18. I'm going to speed this up, but just remember that is when the Wichita State Shockers shocked the world, and as a 9 seed, but they were hooping. 2014, UConn wins it again. This time they beat my Kentucky boys in the national championship. This team is led by Ryan Boatwright and what was the other guard's name? The other guard was probably better than Boatwright. How am I drawing a blank on his name? What was son's name? He was a monster. Ryan Boatwright. Shabazz Napier. Duh. That was embarrassing. Forgetting Shabazz Napier. Napier is embarrassing. My fault, guys. I'll do better. And that's UConn as a 7 seed. Their total seed number in the Final Four is 18. Duke in 2015 is a 1 seed. Their total seed number is 10. That's actually supposed to be Kentucky's undefeated season. We got cheated by the refs in the Wisconsin game, but that's here nor there. That Kentucky team had a bus full of pros. This Duke team, multiple pros. Quinn Cook is on this team. Jahlil Okafor. Tyus Jones is on this team. Justice Winslow. That Duke team had pros. That Wisconsin team that beat Kentucky, Frank Kaminsky, Sam Decker, and maybe a third one, but definitely two pros in Kaminsky and Decker. It's almost like pros, even in college, make for good basketball. Nova 2016, they're a two seed, and their total seed number is 15. Q sneaks in as a 10 seed. 17, UNC, they're a one seed, seed number is a 12. 2018 is the Villanova team, another one of the best teams I've ever seen. Jalen Brunson, Mikhail Bridges, Eric Pascal, Dante DiVincenzo, like just a special, special team, one of the best I've ever seen. Amari Spellman, those dudes just had pros. UVA is a one seed. Theirs is their Final Four total is 11. DeAndre Hunter, pro. Jared Culver of Texas, pro. Those are the guys that were in the national championship that year. 2020, no NCAA tournament because COVID. 2021, Baylor wins it, and they are a one seed. Their total number is 15, but that number's a little misleading because UCLA made it in as an 11, and that really raised their number significantly. And then this year, we have two seeds, a one seed, and an 8 for a number of 13. And then I got all get mathy on you guys, and I took all those numbers and divided them. And lost where I put my number. Woo! Oh, bingo. Found it. Your average Final Four seed number is 12. So if you add up all the seeds of the Final Four over the period of time, 2001 to 2022 that I just did, the average seed number for the Final Four is 12. This would have been a great tool for me to have given you guys at the start of the tournament. So you could know, hey, somewhere along my Final Four seed number should be somewhere between like 8 and 12. 2011 had the highest seed number at 26. That's 3 UConn, 8 Butler, 4 Kentucky, and 11 VCU. The lowest and the only time in the course that we charted was 08, which was Kansas, Memphis, UCLA, UNC with 4. That is the only time in the time we charted that all 4 one seeds have made the Final Four. 11 seeds are the highest seeds to make it. We had 5 in our time, I believe. We had Loyola Chicago in 2018. George Mason in 06, VCU in 2011, and UCLA in 2021. So we had 5. So I hope that was a fun exercise for you guys. I enjoyed taking the notes and doing the little research. I know that part was a little long-winded, so I hope you guys enjoyed that and learned something and didn't find it trivial. For our Final Four matchups, the big one here is Duke versus UNC. And it's the first time these two historic rivals have ever met in the tournament. The schools are like 9 miles apart on Tobacco Road. They're both from North Carolina. UNC is the public school. Duke is the private school. My pops is from Durham, North Carolina. He's a big Duke fan. His younger sister, who might be my Aunt Marie, who might be one of the biggest sports fans I know, is a UNC fan. And I spent enough time in North Carolina and like sports enough that one time I did ask her, well, this was back when I was a kid, you know, before I grew up and wasn't a Duke fan. I remember being like, hey, Aunt Marie, how come you're not a Duke fan? Like me, my dad, my brother, how come you're not with us? And very insightfully, my Aunt Marie said, UNC is, how did she word it? She didn't say this because, once again, I was actually like really a kid. But whatever Aunt Marie's wording was that it was sort of that Duke is in a black community. Durham, North Carolina is a relatively black community. And Duke is there, and she sort of wanted them to just be doing more. Or that was my interpretation as a child. And then UNC is just a little bit more black. So that's the giant matchup. But there's a chance for a storybook ending here for everybody. There's a chance for a storybook ending for Duke fans. But there's also a chance for a storybook ending for Duke haters. That's me. So let's start with like the worst case scenario here. Worst case scenario is Duke wins. And it's a Coach K love fest. And then Duke goes on to win the national championship. And it only gets worse. Like that, if this happens, this will be one of those times where I can't watch SportsCenter for 2 days. Like when your team loses too big, especially in the championship, or a team you win don't want wins the championship, sometimes you're just like, nah, I'm off SportsCenter. I don't need to hear what they got to say. So that's a happy ending for the Dukies. Yuck. Hate that for me. But for the Duke haters, all of us at the Player Haters Ball, if UNC, the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill, knocks out Duke in the Final Four, the first time they meet in the Final Four, that will mean UNC will have handed Coach K his last regular season loss and his last tournament loss. It doesn't get much better than that. Like, imagine that. Not to mention the ramifications of having Hubert Davis, a first-year black head coach, in the national title game. Like, it's already great that he made the Final Four because there were times this season where they were killing Hubert. So it's great for him to see that. But more importantly, UNC giving Coach K his last regular season loss and his last tournament season loss in the Final Four in his last season and Hubert Davis's first season. It couldn't get much better than this. So that is what us haters are hoping for. And then you have Nova, Kansas, before I get off Duke and UNC. Teams that have played each other multiple times in a year, like, so teams from the same conference, make things exciting. Like, Hubert Davis has all the game film he needs on Duke, and Mike Krzyzewski has all the game film he needs on UNC. And I know they've added things, and both teams have added new wrinkles, but you can see what they did successfully versus you in two games, and you can see what you did successfully versus them. You know, sets that gave you trouble. Like, this will make for a fun coaching matchup. Like, outside of the hater thing, I haven't gone really Bobby basketball nerd on you guys in a while. Well, here it is. They've played each other twice. There's a giant rivalry, and there's this awesome, exciting chance that we can break down the film of these three games later and be like, not even later, like at halftime, we'll be able to say, damn, UNC ran this quite frequently versus Duke in this half. Did they run that a lot when they played this season? It's like a basketball geek's heaven. Nova versus Kansas is another really good game. There's good players. I'm really all in on Kansas's Ochiabachi. I promise you, when this microphone is off, I can say his name so successfully. Ochiabachi. Damn, it's two pods in a row. Anyway, boy, did that just that grinded my gears. Nova in Kansas, Ryan Gillespie, a Naismith Memorial Player of the Year candidate. Jay Wright versus Bill Self. There's going to be pros in this game. Ochiabaji, pro. Ryan Gillespie, maybe? Ryan Gillespie, is Ryan Gillespie a pro? He may not be a pro this year, but is there a chance he's on draft radars next year? Can't tell you because I'm not all the way sure what his grade is. But they were Villanova. And why am I calling him Ryan Gillespie? It's Colin Gillespie. I'm sorry. And my draft friends think he will be an undrafted free agent this year because he is a senior. And Jalen Wilson Jr., probably going to be a pro from Kansas. But, like, Duke is loaded with pros as we talk about pros in the Final Four. Pablo Banchero, probably going to be a top three pick. AJ Griffin, Trevor Keels, Mark Williams, Wendell Moore. Like I said, loaded with pros. UNC, I don't think, has a ton of pros. Caleb Love. But he's probably a next year guy. That's according to the chart that I sent you guys out. They have him as a next year guy. So they have that. So Kansas and Nova is going to be a good game. It might wind up being the better basketball game, but it will be overshadowed by the media storm that will be UNC Duke. And then the last thing I have here is the NBA announced that Nikola Jokic, Joel Embiid will not be eligible at forward this year. So that means one of the dudes that's going to be a top five MVP candidate will be on the second team because we use the All-NBA team. We give the All-NBA teams positions, which is so stupid to me. So you have two guards, two forwards, and a center, but you want the best 15 players in the league. Like, when I look at the All-NBA teams, I want to know who the 15 best players in the league were. I don't want to know who the three best centers were and the six best guards and the six best forwards. No, if I want to know the top 15 for a given year, I want to know the top 15 because it gives a better, more realistic snapshot of what the league looked like. Like, in an era that's dominated by centers, if six centers are six of the top 15 players in the league, then I want six centers. If we were in a big point guard boom where we had Derrick Rose, Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook, Damian Lillard, like, point guard was super duper deep. So if we needed 10 point guards on the first team or on the all NBA teams, put 10 point guards, because now when I look a decade from now or 15 years from now, I can say, oh, this year was dominated by guards. Or I can group together 6 years or 8 years and I should be able to look and be like, oh man, this was a really good era for centers, because in 3 out of 5 years, there's 8 centers on there. But instead, I get to know the two best guard, or I get to know the six best guards, the six best forwards, and the three best centers. And sometimes that third team center isn't one of the top 25 players in the league or top 30 guys in the league. And that's just a fact. So like we're not even in a center drought right now, but I don't think we'd have more than four centers on. But if four centers are, it's better to have four centers than six forwards some years. I think that makes sense. And lastly, if you've ever taken TV advice from me, and especially like on the pod is one thing, but like if I know you intimately, like we're like real life friends where we text and we speak, and I've ever recommended a show for you, it's probably a banger. That's not what I was going to say, but that's probably true. If I've recommended you a show and you thought it was trash, I'm sure I've made it my life mission to recommend something else for you that you fall in love with. But I say all that to say, if I've ever given you a good rec, you gotta watch Bel-Air on Peacock. Bel-Air on Peacock it's great. It's the Fresh Prince as a drama. And I was super skeptical at first because are there no original ideas left? Like, why are we always rebooting or recreating content that's already been made? So I was skeptical, but I've tried it. I've been in since week one. I absolutely love it. You need to be watching that. And like for mindless background noise, you've got to watch Abbott Elementary. I absolutely love it. I know I've recommended these shows on recent podcasts, but these shows are so good. Believe me, this is not a sponsored segment. There have been no bags given. Real quick, if somebody want to throw me a bag, a little sponsorship, like, you know how cuz do, help me out, know what I mean? Anyway, Abbott Elementary, Bel-Air, you guys need to be watching both of these shows. And this has been the Shaw's Law Podcast. And like that, wait a minute, one more thing. Degenerate Gambler update. Almost forgot. Your boy is in the money. Hey, you know how cuz do. So, in a pool at a school that my friend's wife works at, shout out Adam Miller, my guy. What up, Chop? Chop, you listen to the pod? Yo, if Chop, you're not listening to the pod, I'm gonna be sick. Anyway, I put in two brackets there, and technically I didn't put in two brackets. I filled out one, and then somebody else filled out one, and we put my name on both brackets. And now, you know my bracket, the real one, had Kentucky in it, so I'm out. But Rob Shaw bracket 2? Rob Shaw Brecky Brack 2? That I didn't pick any of the games for, has fucking Duke winning. I don't want to win. Like, I'd rather lose. And if Duke wins that, we probably win that. And that sucks because if Duke wins, that means Villanova lost. And if Villanova wins, I'm in a spread pool, which is my favorite thing in March Madness. Like, even better than filling out brackets, is a spread pool. So, for those of you that don't know how it works, I'll explain it really quick. You have 64 teams, so you get 64 people, or you have to sell 64 spots. So, teams were $25 this year, and I bought two. So, I gave them 50, and I got two teams. One of the teams I was assigned was Villanova. So, you're playing against the spread. So if it's Villanova -3.5, if Villanova wins by only 3, I would lose Villanova. Like, even though Villanova won the game and they were my team, they didn't cover the spread. So my opponent, when Villanova moves on to the next round, they take my team. And it's just a really fun tournament. It's one of my favorite one that I do in March. And I have Villanova left. And if they can win this or just cover enough for me to win, I'll be in for more money than the other school pool. And it'll mean Duke didn't win. Double wham wham, baby. So that is our degenerate gambler update. Right now in our ESPN tournament challenge, where I'm thinking maybe I'll do like a keychain and a gift card to the winner, like one of those vanilla gift cards. Right now, I think it's my boy Justin Horver's in first. He has Duke winning it, but maybe he's going to win the whole thing the way the numbers look. I'm not sure. We'll see how it plays out. Once again, thank you to everybody who did enter. And now, for realsy this time, this has been the Shaw's Law Podcast. And like that, we out.